Hi, everybody, and welcome back to your Midweek Miracle episode. This time, I'm introducing you to Michelle Walters, who describes herself as a voracious imagination advocate. And as you'll hear, at one time when she was a kid, she also imagined herself living on the moon. But I don't want to take that away from the conversation, so I'm just going to leave that there. She's a clinical hypnotherapist, and she writes and speaks on themes associated with the subconscious, self-improvement, and personal growth. We have a great conversation, and her miracle is especially beautiful this week. And I hope that you too, after listening to this conversation, maybe dream of living on the moon.
This little old man waddling up down the sidewalk, and he was like 80 if he was a day. And he says to my friend, he says, "What do you girls do in an Alameda?" And she says, "Oh," with a big toss of the hair, "we're looking for a place for my friend to rent. She wants to move here." And this little old man says, "My house is for rent." I would say that I am an upbeat, mind-focused master, I don't know, learner, who loves to help people get out of their own way and solve their problems. And one way or another, I've been doing this for a long time. My current shtick is hypnosis and hypnotherapy, but I have been doing this in leadership roles when I worked before in digital marketing and in lots of other kinds of ways. I am a huge believer that mindset is so core and critical to just about everything that I want to help people as much as I possibly can to think right. Think better, think more of themselves, put things in a better place so that their lives can be happier, more rewarding, and healthier.
Yeah, and healthier. Yeah, I was, you and I were just talking before I started recording about a particular class that you offer, which is how to get off sugar. And I thought, I need that class.
Well, I'll be offering it again. I offer it several times a year in person, and I'm looking at now actually making it an e-course as well because it's starting to get a little bit of a name for itself. It's called SOS, Stop Overeating Sugar, and it's a 90-minute class. I spend the first 45 minutes helping people understand a good way to make quality decisions. Because really, when you're choosing to eat sugar, that's a decision. And then the second half of the class is group hypnotherapy for anti-sugar. And the combination of the two seems to leave people feeling really empowered and capable of reshaping their sugar habits and helping people bypass that muffin, bypass that red vine, whatever it is that there's their little, you know, weak self kind of thing, to be able to make better choices, both consciously and subconsciously about sugar.
Oh gosh, I love that. I do know that I'm addicted to sugar, but then I try to think to myself, you know what? I don't know if it's me who's addicted or the bacteria that live in my gut who are just like sending me these prompts and messages. Eat sugar now so we can be happy. Placate us, make us happy. And I try to decide, am I more powerful or stronger than the bacteria? You know, and
I love that. You're like one of the only people who's brought that up. But oh. I love that framing because I think it's true. A lot of what goes on with sugar in one's body has to do with what's in your gut and what's your gut flora. And also, what are your genes? You know, one of the things I bring up in my class is one of the newfangled ways of learning about your sugar and noticing what's going on with your sugar is to use a continuous glucose monitor. Have you seen those?
I haven't.
They're a continuous glucose monitor is like a little button sort of thing that you put on your arm and it goes into it reads your blood sugar levels on a continuous basis and it reports it to your phone. And these were originally created for diabetics so that they would have a practically instant tracking system for their sugar levels. And now people who are not diabetic can get continuous glucose monitors. But what I think is really interesting is that, and I talk about this in my class, is that, you know, sort of the literature or what's out there will tell you, you know, you shouldn't eat rice has carbohydrates. Rice is a sugar, right? So limit the amount of rice you're going to have. Okay. Well, I have a friend of mine. She's Asian American, married to a Caucasian guy. She loves rice. Rice, part of her traditional diet. Well, he can eat rice and his glucose monitor says that his sugar barely changes. But when she eats rice, her sugar goes off the mark. And so, you know, I think, and I mean, this is getting into like not my hypnosis thing, but it is, in my view, evidence that what's in his gut versus what's in her gut are not the same thing. And what does it lead to? It leads to differences in the way sugar is digested. So, you know, in my class, I talk about how to make better decisions about sugar and about information and sources and this kind of a thing. And a continuous glucose monitor is one option, as people are looking for ways to understand what happens when I eat X today, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I have to say, recently I had the stomach flu. It was so bad. And for that week, the only thing that I could psychologically tolerate that my body was even prepared to have put into it was bland white rice with some butter. I couldn't eat, maybe I could eat a piece of toast with butter, but it was like anything that's white and simple.
Well, and I think that's your body or your flora telling you what it needs to cope with the illness, right?
Yeah.
And I mean, that happens all the time. And I think when you're sick, you kind of got to do what your body tells you to do. And then, you know, you can come back to working on the sugar habit when you're feeling better.
Yeah, I have to be honest, you know, it was miserable having that norovirus, but I thought to myself as I was eating buttered rice, you know what, you take advantage of this because, you know, you can't eat buttered rice every day for the rest of your life. Just enjoy it now. Enjoy it. But now you're making me want to get a glucose monitor. I mean, that actually could be quite fascinating to discover how your body tolerates different foods.
Yeah. Yeah, it's very, I think it's fascinating. I haven't gotten one for myself, but I may at some point in the future. My sugar control is not great. It can always be better, but because I talk about it, I am sort of thinking about it all the time. It's been really amazing for the folks that I know who've gotten them because the feedback is almost instantaneous. You know, and my girlfriend started eating lots and lots of kale salads because what does kale salad do? It does not spike her glucose, right? But the French fries, the rice, the oats, all these other things do, but at differing levels. And it's using technology to solve a problem that otherwise you can't solve. And what I think is really important is that what spikes your sugar might not be what spikes everybody else's sugar. So this way you get data that is specific to you. I'm a big fan of custom and specific to you. And that's one of the reasons why I like doing one-to-one hypnotherapy. It's also a reason why I built my app.
I know. I have so much to talk to you about. You know, I do ask this question because your vocation and what you're doing is so singular. You know, when you were a kid, what did you dream of becoming?
Really? What did I dream of becoming?
Yeah.
When I was a little kid, I told people I wanted to be the first actress on the moon.
What?
Yeah, that's what I told people I wanted to do. I wanted to be the first actress on the moon. And then, you know, it wasn't until later that I kind of realized that as a career aspiration was probably out of bounds or not quite, it wasn't the right time for it. But that's what I wanted to be.
Okay, that is amazing.
I think I've always been a very creative person.
Okay. So when you thought about this, were you acting inside a spacesuit?
No, I don't really know how I was going to be an actress on the moon. I guess I assumed there was going to be an audience there. I don't know. That there would be a theater on the moon and I would be on the stage.
I have to tell you that I think you were born ahead of time. You know what I mean? Like in 200 years, you could be an actress on the moon.
In 200 years, that might be a career aspiration worthy of consideration. But, you know, when I was 7 or 8, I guess I don't know what I thought. I just thought the world would evolve very quickly. And, you know, it sounded like a cool job to me. So.
Oh, yeah. No, I have never even heard of that job. And suddenly I just want to do that. So you've made me so happy. It's just so exciting. Let me ask you, you know, your younger self, even into your teen years, could you have envisioned what you're doing now?
No. No, never. Not at all. So growing up, I was a serious kid, you know. I mean, I did like to be in shows and I was in plays and stuff. But for the most part, I was a pretty serious kid. I was a top student in high school. And then I went off to UC and I got a degree in biology. Like I was very, very science focused and really anticipated I would likely go into medicine or nursing or something like that. Well, somewhere along the way, I really fell in love with economics and loved business. And so I decided to go off and get a business degree. So I got an MBA from University of Washington. And then after that, what seemed like the most fun to do was to work in creative advertising. And what I've realized now is that creative advertising was a great place for me because it was very creative and yet it still had quite a bit of structure. You know, we had projects, we had campaigns, we had, you know, measurements, that kind of a thing. So it had this mix of creativity, but also structure that I really, really liked. I also liked it because it was about getting people's minds in the right frame of mind, right? It was about encouraging people to try a new product or go talk to a representative or whatever campaign I might be working on. And so it had to do a lot with thinking about what could we say that would be creative and persuasive and get people's attention and make them do something. And so I liked marketing for all of these reasons and spent a long time doing it. I worked for great big companies and enjoyed that career enormously. Curiously, in about 2018 or 2019, I read a book by one of my favorite authors called A Hypnotist Love Story. And this book was about a hypnotherapist who lived in Sydney in a house on the beach, and she helped people with their problems. And I read this book and I thought, oh my God, she has the coolest job. I want to do that. So I Googled it and I found a school to go to on the weekends and I trained on the side. And then at the end, well, mid halfway through the pandemic, my life kind of went, it just kind of fell apart. And so I was like, well, a lot of people are changing jobs right now. My last gig in digital marketing had come to an end. I was like, if I'm ever going to hang up a shingle and do something new, this is the universe telling me the door's open. And so I rented an office and started seeing clients. And now I've been at this for several years. I've seen people for lots of different things. I've helped people with big problems and little problems. And I really love the work.
You know, just for my own edification, because I'm a nerd and I'd love to just hear your response to this or your reflection on this. What do you think the placebo effect is?
So the placebo effect is all over the place. And it is absolutely sort of woven into hypnosis and hypnotherapy, right? Yeah. So the placebo effect is really when something works because you believe it's going to work. Right. And this is why when we test medications and they go through the full scientific discovery, we want medications where you don't know what you took. And then we measure. And it turns out that the people who took the real thing did markedly better than the people who didn't. Right. You can't really measure hypnosis by the placebo effect because it leans into the placebo effect to work. So, you know, I don't know. I could try giving somebody fake hypnosis, but that wouldn't really, that's not really a thing, you know? Placebo effect is part, I don't think it's all, but I think it's part of what makes hypnotherapy effective. We, our science now, and for a long time, hypnosis was like thrown in the category of like ghosts or whatever, right? And now we, our science has advanced. And so we can now put someone who's in a state of hypnosis in an MRI machine and see that what happens is that when you're in a state of hypnosis, certain parts of your brain are dialed down. And when those parts of your brain dial down, you become more suggestible, more focused, and more open to your imagination and kind of less connected to your body and sort of able to imagine things. And in that very special state, which is a natural state, everybody goes in and out of that state all the time, including right before you fall asleep. It is a wonderful time to explore, embed, kind of go into that space and be able to help people change their thinking or change their behaviors.
Yeah, I have to say that, you know, when I've experienced that liminal space between being awake and going to sleep, it's intoxicating. It feels so good. I don't even know what it is, but it does feel good. And, you know, for example, I've heard if you drive the same way home every night when you're done with work, you almost, because you've done it so many times, go into this state of hypnosis because you're just, it's rote, it's learned behavior. And part of you can disassociate or have a flight of fancy. It's actually quite fascinating. I don't know.
I think so.
Yeah.
I think it's totally fascinating. And love helping people to see how to use this space to achieve goals. You know, whether that's maybe helping somebody to do better at work or handle a shifting situation at work, helping somebody get through a breakup or a troubled relationship. I help a lot of people with anxiety and who are just nervous or shaky about things for whatever reason. And some cases of specific anxiety, like I've had quite a few clients, especially right after the pandemic, who had driving anxiety, some of them who had been drivers before, some had never been drivers before, but who were just afraid to get behind the wheel. And I think some of it was that, you know, people didn't drive as much during the pandemic, but that wasn't all of it. There was just a little bump in demand. But hypnotherapy is just really pretty magical. And I've seen such great success with my clients.
Oh, I love that. That's so interesting about the driving. I would never think of that, but it makes sense. So
because when you're in a state of hypnosis, you're able to visualize things happening, right? And your brain can't really tell the difference between when it's imagined and when it's real. The brain has a hard time understanding that distinction. And so for that reason, that's why a lot of Olympic athletes use hypnotherapy. That's why you can use hypnotherapy for overcoming pain, because you can imagine things so strongly that it changes your actual perception of them.
Wow. Wow. Groovy.
Exactly. But like your question, like, could I have imagined myself doing this? No, I was way too serious. I could never have imagined that this would be what I would do. But here I am.
I love it because we need you. Let me ask you the second question, which is, did you grow up in a religious household? If so, what did that look like? And then, you know, do you still have a relationship with something outside yourself? And how has that evolved over time?
I grew up with a Catholic mother and a not really religious father. And we did all the Catholic stuff. growing up, you know, first communions and confirmations and all that kind of stuff. And really, I was expected, I was the oldest of three girls. I was pretty much expected to be the, you know, the good kid, right? And so I did, I really followed all of that stuff until I graduated high school and went off to college and wasn't really participating so much after that. And curiously, when my son was born, I felt the need to go back to the church, and in part because my son was a little kid and I was married and my husband had a severe disability, and church kind of could play sort of a drumbeat role in our lives. And so and that felt right at the time. But now, I mean, I might go to church a couple times a year, but I don't feel like I need to go to church to know God or to access that relationship in my life. The Catholic Church has done a lot of wonderful, amazing things for the globe and a lot of terrible, despicable things for the world. And I guess it's funny. I kind of think of myself as someone who's like, you know, up until kind of first or second grade, the Catholic message is really good. You know, be nice to each other. And that's the part of it that resonates with me, kind of the all the rest of it. It's history.
Thank you for that answer. Everyone's faith journey or non-faith journey or whatever is different. And I just like hearing about it because we live in such an interesting time, right? Because 1,000 years ago, there really was worldwide one religion, you know, Catholicism in Europe. And you didn't really have a choice. That was what you did. And we're living in such an interesting time where there's a multiplicity of possibilities for however, including that you don't even belong to any faith tradition and you just have right. your own connection, which I right. think is very exciting.
I think it's exciting too. What I do think has happened though is that religion and faith communities really served as communities and as ways of bringing people together and putting, you know, the bankers and the shoemakers on the same platform, like in the same group. And I think we have lost some of that by having a much lower percentage of people who have churches or go to services or that kind of a thing. And we'll figure it out. But I do think that that gap is part of why we live in such a diverse and a little bit of chaotic kind of society right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Those spaces and places engendered community, whether you wanted it to or not, you know, whether you were going to come on a Saturday night for a potluck or, you know, there was a group that got together that knitted sweaters for those who needed sweaters, you know, any number of things of organizing and bringing people together. And I do think that the loss or the diminution of those, you know, the attendance at those places is, you know, it's increasing loneliness. It's increasing a lot of.
And that's part of it too, right?
Yeah.
We've now become such a technology empowered society that, you know, I have a friend and her kid is at college and has made very few friends at college because his friends are online friends he plays video games with. And, you know, this is a friend of mine from college. Like, you know, she and I are still talking many, many years later. And it's I don't know, it's a sign of the times, right? But I'm a big believer that life is kind of like a pendulum. You know, things swing one way and then eventually they turn around and swing the other. And I'm hoping on some of these trends that we've hit kind of that high mark and it's going to be time for some of them to start swinging back the other way.
I agree. I mean, LPs came back, right? After everybody was.
It's true. You know, I was in the Half Price Books the other day and I was like, oh my God, there's all these records in here now.
Yes. Who knew that after the invention of the CD and everybody's like, this is so optimal, this is amazing and perfect, we don't need anything else other than the CD. And then, now there's a tiny little thing that you can carry around with you called an iPod. And who needs CDs anymore? That's ridiculous. And now we've kind of swung back to where people just adore records, adore having a record player. The whole piece of owning a record is just precious to them. And I just thought, thank God, because when I was growing up, I was just talking about this the other day, and I had a favorite song that I just loved so much. I told them, you just don't understand. You had to turn on the radio and you basically had to wait. If you didn't have the record, you had to wait and hope that the DJ would play the song. That was your only, that's what happened. And they were like, what? I don't understand that. And I'm like, what? Oh my God. Oh my God.
Or eventually being happy that for Christmas, you got the tape player that would record and then you could tape it off the radio so you could listen to it over and over again. Right? I mean, that was me.
Yes, it was actually with a great pang of sadness. I heard that MTV was done and went off the air. I don't know if you heard.
I know. I saw that news recently and I was like, oh my gosh, it's the end of an important era.
I know. I was like, am I a decrepit old hag? I might be. My God, everything's changing so much. I don't know.
And I think that's part of it too. I think the world is, we're starting to change so quickly that's part of the reason why we can't get anything done or make anything happen. And I mean, some of it is good. Some of it's going to turn out amazing. And some of it is like cell phones in schools, right? You know, so we just gave everybody cell phones and didn't really kind of pay attention to what was that going to do for our youth. And now a few years later, we're like, actually, it's really not good to have cell phones in schools, right? And so we've got to take a look at how those policies changes, how those practices change, that kind of a thing. I mean, you look at social media, you look at AI, you look at a bunch of these things, and I don't know. I heard on the radio today that Musk wants to consolidate his companies because he wants to put data centers in space. And I'm like, okay, thinking about it, this is as crazy as being an actress on the moon, right? Is it achievable? Oh, I don't know. Is it where to put resources? I don't know. It's going really, really fast.
Well, I was thinking I'd rather, when you first said this just now, I would rather pray that you become an actress on the moon before he puts data centers in space.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your trust and your applause.
It is interesting, actually, you know, seeing my nieces and nephews, and they're just all so addicted to their cell phones. And it's just everyone's face is just downward looking at their screen and how quickly that's changed. I mean, I just remember being a kid and I grew up in the 70s and 80s. And, you know, I was expected to talk with adults. I was expected to have conversations and be good at it, be capable of holding a conversation. And I really do think a lot of the kids I meet these days, like, literally have nothing to say. They have no capacity to have any sort of conversation. It's really kind of strange to me. And I just think cell phones are just doing such a disservice for the life of the mind of children. Like, I mean, I was telling someone the other day, you know, in college when I had to write a paper, I had to go onto this computer system, look up any article that was logged in the system. Then I had to go to this desk and fill out a request form. And then they would go into the bowels of the establishment, hopefully find the magazine article. Then they'd give it to me. Then I would actually have to sit and read it, couldn't take it home, and hopefully extract quotations and what I needed from it. But it wasn't like I could just type online and find everything. I actually had to spend significant amount of time, you know, and so did the person. I went to University of Illinois Champaign-Urbana, and you want to talk about the stacks in that place? They could be gone for an hour trying to find the book that I needed. There was something beautiful about waiting, though, you know, in that.
Yeah, the generation today knows almost nothing about waiting. For the most part, and has everything at the world at their fingertips, and is moving away from reading.
Yeah.
You know, I have a college age son, and it is very, very hard to get him to read much of anything, even if it's just an article kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know, I do think social media has really affected people's attention spans.
Yes.
And in a mostly negative way. And I don't know how we pull out of it. Again, I'm optimistic that we will, but it's dangerous. It's dangerous because we're going so fast.
Yeah.
We're going so fast. It's the price of going so fast, you know? Yeah.
I know it's affected me because when I was a kid, I used to read books like There Was No Tomorrow, and I could just be sucked in and read and be committed. And now my attention span is just so fractured. And I thought to myself, I need to just get off social media and get off my phone as much as possible, because it's really changing the way my brain, or the capacities, I guess, that my brain has. But I recognize it, you know, I recognize it as not healthy or normal. For me,
I think it's one of the things that has really led me to become a very audio focused person. I've always liked audio, and now I do a lot via audio. I have sort of not turned into a YouTube junkie. I listen to podcasts. I listen to books. I talk to friends on audio, even on Zoom audio. And that's been kind of my way of trying to cope, that I'm still, I mean, I do spend more time on social media than I want. I'm not a hero in that regard, but I do try to make a conscious effort not to get so pulled into the rabbit hole, because it has its own gravitational force, and it can be hard to pull out of. It's not unusual for a client to come see me for something else, and then we start talking and I realize that they got a social media problem too, or a phone problem.
Yes, it's so addicting, just like sugar. I wish they had a little button that you could put on your arm, and every time you spent more than 5 minutes on social media, it would zap you, and then you could stop.
Well, it's funny because I've recommended to people that they use the timer, like the nanny timer for your kids. You can use that timer for yourself. But then, of course, you can always put in your password and skip it, right? The best one I've heard recently is an author I was listening to said, on Mondays, I give my assistant changes the password to my social media. And then on Fridays, she changes it back to something. And so every Friday I get a new password for my social media. I get social media on the weekends, and then Monday she turns it off again. And I was like, wow, like that's kind of control. But, you know, I think we all need to be open to creative solutions as to kind of what is it going to take for you to make changes that you want to make. Sometimes the changes you need to make are in your head, and we can do so much with the subconscious in hypnotherapy. And sometimes, you know, maybe you need to have your assistant change the password for a few weeks.
Yeah.
Or your wife or your friend or whatever.
That's brilliant. Thanks for that. You actually gave me just a great idea. I have to find someone to do this for me now. I will be successful. Let me ask you, I'd love to ask you the main question of the podcast before we get into, you know, your app and the work that you're doing there. I would so appreciate it if you would share, it could be one story, it could be two stories, where either you witnessed or you experienced something you consider to be magical, miraculous, or mysterious.
Okay, so I got a good one for this. So I've written a book about manifesting. And this is one of the books that one of the stories that I tell in my manifesting book. It's called An Alignment of Spirit. So it was about, well, let's see, it was June 1999. And I was moving back from Texas to the Bay Area. And I looked around on the map. I was going to be flying out of the airport quite a bit, and I was going to be online. And so I thought, oh, it'd be good to live near an airport. Oh, I could live near Oakland Airport. Oh, there's this little town there called Alameda. Look, it's quite cute. It's right there. I didn't know anybody in Alameda. But, you know, this was 1999. So when you need a place to live, like Craigslist wasn't even big then. You like drove around where you wanted to live and looked for rent signs, right? So my girlfriend and I were driving around Alameda looking for rent signs. And it was a hot June day. And we were a little tired. So we decided to pull over and get ourselves like a soda, a drink. So pull over my car, and my girlfriend, I'm blonde. My girlfriend gets out of the car. She's blonde too. This little old man waddling up down the sidewalk, and he was like 80 if he was a day. And he says to my friend, he says, "What are you girls doing in Alameda?" And she says, "Oh," with a big toss of the hair, "we're looking for a place for my friend to rent. She wants to move here." And this little old man says, "My house is for rent." And we looked at him and we were like, okay. Like, he was way too old to be coming on to us, right? And we're like, okay. And he's like, "Well, yeah, it's just a couple blocks away. The wife isn't home. She's watching tennis. Our son is a pastor in Northern California. We're going to go move up there. We're going to rent the house out. Maybe we'll sell in the future, but we're going to go see if we want to live by our son because we're getting older." And we said, okay. And he's like, "Well, here's the address." And we're like, "We're going to go get our Coke right now." So we go and we get our Cokes, and then we were like, "Well, should we go and see where this place is? See what it is?" So we go over there, and I was like, "Oh, it's a nice neighborhood. It's close to downtown. I like it, you know." And so we knocked on the door and wound up meeting the wife, who was watching the tennis game. And anyway, I wind up renting this house, and then I said yes to my boyfriend about getting married. And a year later, the couple who rented us the house said, "Well, we want to sell it." So we bought it. And so this house really found me. Like, I didn't start talking to this guy on the sidewalk. He started talking to me. And so, you know, do I think that the universe sometimes delivers you the things that you are asking for or wanting? Yes. And sometimes in the most magical, strange ways. Sold a car once. I had a broken down truck that I couldn't get to run when I was living in Texas, and so it was parked on an alley behind my house. And this mechanic or some guy named Terry, because I remember he had a little Terry on his shirt, comes walking down the street one day and says, "Hey, is that truck for sale?" Like, why do you just ask about trucks in people's driveways and if they're for sale? And I was like, "Yes," and so I sold it to Terry. Like, there was no for sale sign. Why would he ask me that? But he did. And I offloaded the car, which had been a real problem because the car could barely run. So.
Oh, my goodness. Those are both. I mean, talk about synchronicity and things coming together and manifesting and really, really fabulous. I want to ask you this because you're a hypnotherapist, and I'm intrigued by the research into consciousness that's happening. And it's actually very exciting because, you know, there are a lot more resources being devoted worldwide to consciousness. I think the general, maybe there might be a consensus forming that consciousness is non-local and it's actually outside of ourselves. And that we, you know, potentially are walking through consciousness versus it being inside our bodies, which I think is so exciting and fascinating. And to my mind, when you engage in hypnosis or hypnotherapy, you are kind of breaking down those barriers. I mean, I read a really interesting book and they talked about the gating channels in the brain. And so when you're young, you're open to everything. But as you get older, you start to create these kind of lockdowns or gates on your perception so that you weren't flooded with so much information. And the gates, the locking down of the gates helps keep you sane and safe so that you don't get overwhelmed by stimuli. You know, and there have been times when I've been in that liminal space between being awake and being asleep where I have felt those gates release and loosen a little bit. And so when that's happened, I've sometimes had what people would consider supernormal experiences or perceptions. I am curious, you know, I'd love to hear your response on what you think consciousness is, but you've also been doing this hypnotherapy for so long. I mean, do you think the practice of hypnotherapy or hypnosis, do you think it helps open those gates?
Absolutely. Absolutely, it does. Absolutely, it does. So I don't know how it all works. The model that I sort of lean into right now is that we each have an individual brain, and we actually have brain cells in our heart and some other parts of the body. But I kind of envision each individual has their own little radio, their own little operating system that is working for them. But what I think that we don't really have the science quite yet to prove is that each individual operating system has an antenna. And that antenna can connect to other people's operating systems. It can connect to like, I don't know where it goes, to the a cosmic mind, I might call it. And that cosmic mind is, in my view, what inspired Einstein, what inspired Mozart, like where some of those, you know, amazing intelligences have come from are really individuals tuning their antenna to that cosmic mind. And I think that over time, and it's going to be quite a timeline, we will find more and more evidence that supports, yes, there is an individual local system, but there is also a connection to other things. And one of the things I teach when I teach my classes about hypnosis is that you don't have to believe in the cosmic mind or anything woo for hypnosis to work. It will work because of the science of the brain. However, for people who are interested in developing their radio antenna to the cosmic mind or the universe or whatever you want to call it, hypnosis helps to open that door.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to a medicine worker last week, and I asked her about trance, you know, and I said, you know, are you ever afraid that you're not going to come back? And she said, well, that's why I use the drums. The drums help me to regulate me so that I emerge out of it when they're over. And I said, you know, to be honest, when I've experienced several times in my life when I felt myself going into trance, and I've always self-arrested and stopped it because it was getting so intoxicating and felt so good. And I thought I might not be able to come back from this. It just felt, and it's so hard to explain to other people what it feels like. It's like a dissolution of self. Your self just disappears. It's very strange. You know, at some point I'd like to be able to actually enter into trance without feeling like I'm going to lose myself, but it is a whole other level of reality that is just mind blowing.
And I think there are people who either naturally know or have already learned how to go into that state. And there are people who go into that state modestly deep. And then there are people who can go into that state extremely deep. But that other state is really, I love being in that other state. I love helping people go into that state because it is such a powerful place to be. And it is a beautiful place for dreams and where reality doesn't really need to catch you, you know? And I mean, I guess there are people today who spend too much time there, but there are also plenty of people who spend almost no time there that might have better lives if they did.
Yeah. Yeah. And to be honest, what you just said, you know, talking about going into this place where there are dreams or like a different reality. And just looking at the state of the world today, I'm like, I might, you know, it might be preferable to just spend a little more time there than I already am.
Yeah. Well, and there are people who, can kind of learn to go out of their bodies for a period of time. In hypnotherapy school, we watched a video of a man undergoing a hernia operation in the state of hypnosis, no pain medications, and making it all the way through the surgery. You know, so the notion of, can you learn to go, maybe you can't learn to go out of your body for a hernia operation, but maybe you could, if you were nervous about a blood draw and you just wanted to be able to get through 90 seconds, right? Maybe you could, if you were delivering a baby and you wanted to be able to kind of go out of your body at that most painful moment of your labor pains, like people can learn to do this. Shamans have been teaching people how to do this for generations, for centuries. And now the training is still in those communities, but it's moving out to meditation teachers and EFT practitioners and hypnotherapists like me, because they're valuable skills that, you know, just because they don't fit sort of a Western science perspective doesn't mean they're not helpful and work. My practice is really focused on what works for people. You know, every now and again, I'll work with a client and they'll seem to go into a past life. And is it a past life? I don't know. Do I believe in past lives? Yes, more or less, but it's not really a big thing for me. If it is helpful to their healing journey, so be it. Let's just let them be helped by that, right?
Yeah. And I mean, if you believe in past lives, that means then in the future, there is a very good chance that you will be able to act on the moon. I'm just saying.
Well, I mean, the other theory is that all time is happening all the time, right? Past, present, and future are all happening now. And so maybe I've already been an actress on the moon.
Well, I need a ticket to that show. So
thank you. I'm glad to have someone in the audience.
Everyone, I hope you enjoyed this conversation, and I hope you enjoyed meeting Michelle, who, you know what, if she does end up acting on the moon, I'm going to be right there. First flight, first tickets, front row center. That's the end of that story. I want to thank her for being so vulnerable and funny and whimsical and serious at the same time, with a lot of integrity and a lot of grace. If you want to do a deeper dive on Michelle, there will be multiple links in the episode's show notes, so be sure to check those out. I want to say thank you to each and every one of you who listens. Please do consider writing a review or leaving a rating. Those ratings and reviews help other people find this little labor of love of mine. Thank you for listening, and here's my one request. Be like Michelle. Live a life filled with creativity and whimsy. I mean, she's always thinking about what to create next, how to be more engaged with people and the world, and how to bring beauty to people, how to help people heal, how to help them understand themselves. Because, you know, we all need to do a little bit of healing, or a whole lot of healing. And I think, you know, the world in general needs a whole lot of healing. So thank goodness Michelle's around to help us out. So be like Michelle and approach life with zest and imagination. We need more zestiness, I think, in the world. And with that, I'll see you next time for the very next episode of The Pod.